Hello, welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast, the podcast about tiny plastic people. We paint them, we play with them. We're here to tell you why we think that's great. This is the sister podcast to the website tinyplasticpeople.com, which is a collaborative blog project between several committed hobbyists. My name's Rich. I've been in the hobby for about 6 years now. I play pretty much everything, but as much as I'm passionate about gaming, painting is my favourite part of the hobby, so that's what I'm here for, really. I'm also joined today by Tom and Pete. Pete, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
I'd love to. I'm Pete, aka Fienya on the internet. I've been back in the hobby since 2014, after the traditional teen phase. I play pretty much everything. Bit of an army painter. I like to paint in quantity. But I also moderate the lovely Role Models community, which we're all a part of.
And Tom, how about you?
Hi, I'm Tom. I have been in the hobby on and off since I was about 13. I would say I'm probably a gamer more than I am a painter, in normal times at least, mostly AOS and 40k. But just recently I have been getting a bit into Warcry because it is one of the best games to play against yourself in an empty room.
Very important at the moment. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit more later about some topics we've brought to the table, what we've been thinking about at the moment. But first, we're going to talk about our hobby. So Tom, what hobby have you been doing lately?
This month I have been... I've not been doing one consistent thing. The start of the year, I always end up painting lots of little projects as I try and finish things off. So this month that has been some Inquisition stuff, because I have got a vague Inquisition-y force that is usually like an Inquisitor and assorted interesting weirdos.
Yeah, I've seen that at a few events that we've met up at, and it's very lovely. Lots of cool conversions.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't get the chance to bring it to the Inquisitor 28 thing, but if something like that happens again, I should probably bring it along. I've been trying to finish them off with a squad of Scions, the less said about which the better. And I've not been enjoying them tremendously.
Is that just the painting process?
Let's not dwell on that. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything nice at all. They're lovely models. What I have been enjoying was the squad of Death Watch I did. So I bought into them when they first came out, I think, which means that this squad has been on my painting pile for several years.
Yeah, now. I think that was about when I was rejoining, actually. So 2014, seven years ago, question mark.
It predates my rejoining of the hobby in any seriousness, I think, so.
Some considerable time, and it was only ever a squad of 10. They say that black is a really hard color to do, so I tried to find a lazy way of doing that and borrowed something from Kieran Gillen's Twitter, which is black Templar contrast over lead Belcher spray paint. So that's...
So almost like a metallic finish black.
Yeah, it comes out quite nicely, yes. Mm. So as with contrast over metal, I think it goes really well if you do a little bit of recess shading and dry brushing.
Right.
Yeah, and then kind of just slop the contrast on, and it's okay for power armor if you keep your eye on it and don't let it pool in weird places. And that's turned out pretty all right. So that was like all of the basic color armor done for them in about 20 minutes.
Wow. For all 10.
Pretty excellent.
Yeah, it was nice and easy.
I really should get into contrast. I hardly use it. I bought like 20 of the paints and just never really use them except for like skin or organic surfaces.
Speaking as a lazy painter, it's great if you plan ahead. Mm-hmm. It's great if you know specifically what you're trying to do with it. And once that was done, it was just the interesting individual Death Watch bits. I tried some freehand on a shoulder pad and didn't make a complete fool of myself.
Hell yeah.
Nice, self-development. You've done some awesome shoulder pads on that Deathwatch squad. Some really neat
this was the
chapters, right?
The Mantis Warriors. I remember them because I was going to collect. I think like common with a lot of other people in this hobby, I've attempted to collect different Space Marines about half a dozen times, and Mantis Warriors were one of my attempts.
I'm the same. I've got a graveyard of like half painted Space Marine test models. Just sort of never to receive any further attention because something else has distracted me.
Well, we know the truth now. If it ain't a Legion, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I've done this month is in the practice podcast, I made a joke about how I read and enjoyed Saturnine and could end up getting a very expensive, very hard to paint Imperial Fist Legion army. And I went ahead and did that. I got a copy of Burning of Prospero and practicing painting yellow on a couple of those.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
More 30k players. I will always get behind this initiative.
Yeah. Yeah. 30k is the secret of Space Marines that everyone loves to paint.
Exactly. It's because they're all basically the same colour. It's so quick.
Yeah. Who would know?
Yeah, so long as you choose a sensible colour, like not
yellow,
for example. Yellow, yeah. Yeah, but I think I've got a reasonable method for that that's like base, wash, dry brush, and it's not going to stand up to particularly close scrutiny, but I think for effectively a horde army, which is what Legion armies are, I think it's going to turn out all right.
Having seen your test model, I think it looks rad.
Yeah.
Very, very crisp yellow.
The thing that I feel sums up my painting, which is a friend of mine once saw my Eldar army when I took that to a tournament, and he saw it from a distance and said, "Wow, now this is painting." And then he went over to it and picked up one of the models and looked at it closely and said, "Oh."
That's outrageous.
That is a friend with tact. So, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I think my painting abilities are a testament to choosing good colour schemes and how nice any massed army looks, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I've worked on.
Awesome.
How about you, Pete? What have you been up to?
Well, usually I'm a sort of small whirlwind of activity when it comes to hobby stuff, but for reasons that will become obvious in my second segment. I haven't been painting that much. I just finished up 10 cultists for my sort of nascent Black Legion Chaos Space Marine army. And they're weird models because obviously they're like on the tabletop, they're trash. They're like, you know, mooks to just pick up by the handful and throw into a bin. But they're so detailed and each one of them is a sort of sexy man with abs that you have to individually paint, and it's just, I don't know, it's a lot for a horde unit. I painted 10 of them, finished them up the other day, and it must have taken me 3 or 4 days of, like, you know, working on them every now and again.
Yeah,
I like this is why, as previously mentioned, I like 30k, because you paint a Space Marine all the same color, you pick out the trim maybe on the shoulder pad, highlight, done. Make their knees dusty,
yeah.
If you want.
You do it 60 more times.
Yeah, and then you're done. Paint a vehicle once if you're feeling fruity.
maybe you do a Primarch and that's just a really big Space Marine.
Yeah,
what is Primarch if not a big Space Marine?
A big boy.
That does really kind of make you think sometimes. Those cultists, they're a bit of an older kit now, but they're still really nice individual models. Mm. But when there's so few points each on the table, like you said, you're kind of sweeping them off by the armful.
Yeah.
Them being individuals is a bit concerning.
For sure. It shouldn't matter to me because I really measure my progress on a model-by-model basis, so anything's as good as anything else. But you still can't help but have that feeling at the back of your head. And I mean, other than that, I've just been sort of chipping away at the few final Chaos Space Marine models that I've owned, and thinking about buying a lot of Terminators, as is the tradition.
Excellent. I can really get on board with this.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I know that you're a Terminator man, and so am I. But yeah, no, not loads of activity for me. I mean, the only other thing I've really been in the hobby headspace with is thinking about doing more 30k stuff. I mean, I have 3,500 points of Blood Angels painted and about 2,000 points of Sons of Horus. So I think I could probably expand the Sons of Horus without it being too outrageous. But what to do? That's the question. I think maybe a bit.
Have you got Horus himself yet?
I do. And yeah, he's looking hot, if you don't mind my saying about my own painting. Speaking of painting black armor being a ball ache, that really was. But
worth it in
yeah.
the end.
Maybe I'll look into some of the other special characters they have. Converting project. Bit of a Malagurst the Twisted, perhaps.
Oh, that'd be a good one. There's not a Forge World model.
No
for
official
him,
model. No.
Could be a fun conversion project.
How about yourself, Rich?
A few different things I've been working on this month. I'm working on getting a couple of commissions off of my plate. I've just picked up another one which I donated as a charity prize to the Hobby Room's Mind fundraiser that they did recently. Raised a load of money for Mind, the mental health charity.
That's super cool. So, what did you contribute to that?
So I offered a like a character commission, including buying the character off of Element Games. The person that won it was after some older vampires and undead stuff. So I have a female vampire lord and a necromancer to paint, and said, if you paint them both for me, I will make another donation. So I've now signed up for more of my time.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm about to start those. It seems like I've got carte blanche on how I paint them. So I might go for some kind of real gothic horror themes. A big hobby milestone for me recently is getting an airbrush working. So I'm suddenly tempted to do lots of like source lighting and glazing that maybe was previously something I couldn't really be bothered to do with a brush. So yeah, there's those. As part of that stream, I also did a paint along with the host Kerry and painted Void Dragon, the Catan shard of the Void Dragon for my Necrons.
Such good model to, like, I don't know, it's almost like a blank slate for doing whatever you want with, because people do all sorts of different effects and so forth.
It makes a really nice centerpiece. So I think everyone that I've seen do one has approached it in kind of a different way. But because it's so unlike most of the Necrons that it's going to sit beside, it's a really good opportunity to make a centerpiece that actually stands out.
Yeah, so, really draws the eye.
So like, I have a monolith. I really enjoy painting the monolith, but my Necrons are silver and blue, and the monolith is a big silver and blue blob.
Yeah, it's like complementary as opposed to additive, right? Yeah.
Whereas my Void Dragon, I've done the skin or the body gold, which is just kind of the like elite highlight color on most of the rest of the Necron, so it really stands out. And then there's loads of the energy and lightning coruscating around him. Yeah, that was fun. It was quite intimidating to try and make it happen in a weekend, but it did. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, it looked great.
Rapidly running out of Necron things to paint. Well, in fact, I've got no more Necrons to paint, and there's only a few more things that I haven't done from the web store now.
Just got to get that new Kill Team expansion, eh?
Yeah, sure. I will be after some Flayed Ones at some point, whether they come from a split of that or once they're released separately, we'll see. Other than that, a bit similar to yourself, Pete, like, not done a huge amount of hobby, especially compared to how much I did last year. I've definitely slowed down after Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, you were ridiculous last year. Well, how many models did you paint in the end?
Just over 500, I think. But
yeah,
you know,
absolutely outrageous.
At the incredible cost of well,
sanity?
Any other social activity and my mental health. So
yeah, what was different about last year?
Can't put my finger on
when
it.
We're listening back to this in 2 years' time, we'll just think we were all really productive and not think of any of the situations around it. Yeah, so I slowed down a bit. I've been doing some building, so similar to both of you, I'm thinking about Heresy. I've got an Iron Warriors army sitting somewhere just above 2,000 points now, and I'm adding a few things to that. So more Terminators and another Dreadnought and a few little support characters to do.
Ooh, didn't know you're getting another Dreadnought. That's exciting.
Yeah, so it was an eBay purchase. I wasn't sure which army I was going to put him in, but I think Iron Warriors is going to win. Yeah, the other possibility would be to put him in with my Custodes, which are kind of my upcoming
Contemptors.
Loyalist.
Can they actually take Contemptors in 30k? I'm not 100% sure on that.
You know, neither am I.
Like normal Contemptors.
They've got their fancy kind of Contemptor, for definite.
Yeah, so I've got one of the, I think it's the Galatas with the sword and shield.
Yes.
And I've got the big Telamon, and I've got a load of troops ready, kind of ready. I've painted a test model. You're right, I'm not sure.
They probably can. There's so many weird, like, you know, you can take this in 40k and not 30k and vice versa, yeah, sort of scenarios with the things that you can take in both. For more details, please read my article on tinyplasticpeople.com.
Definitely something you could ally in.
Yeah.
Like, if paint it as an ultramarine, yeah, yeah, or something, and trad, staple a character to it and ally it in.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Although I think I might just paint it as an Iron Warrior and
yes,
reinforce Perturabo's Legion instead. Yeah. Other than that, that's pretty much it. Lots of thinking, lots of building for a change. I'm not a big fan of building, so...
Yeah, I'm the same. Prefer to paint.
Yeah. The only other thing I've been thinking about doing is painting an ultramarine. There's been a lot of talk on everyone's favourite dustbin Twitter. The hashtag March for McCrag. Lots of people committing to paint some ultramarines over March.
You know, I only got that that's what it meant. When you said it most recently, I just thought, oh yeah, it's that thing that they say in the books.
Yeah,
turns out if it's happening over March, there's a little bit of wordplay as well.
Weird coincidence.
Yeah, I never put two and two together there.
It's one of those puns I've been hearing about.
May the 5th be with you.
Yeah, so I've got no real desire to do a whole force of ultramarines because they were the first thing I did when I got back into hobby. I did a little Primaris Ultramarines Force, but that new Uriel Ventress model is quite tempting. That might be a nice one-off project to do, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe. Probably should just paint something from the big box of shame / potential. Choose as you see fit. But, you know, sometimes it's just nice to buy a model and paint it straight away.
Yeah.
Okay, so lots of nice hobby going on. But we've also brought some other topics to talk about our thoughts or experiences recently in wargaming and the wargaming hobby. In no particular order, Pete, what do you want to talk about today?
So, as I mentioned very cryptically in my hobby section, my time has been taken up by a mysterious activity that previously hadn't infringed on my hobby time, which is called buying a house. Oh god, it's horrible, but also you get a house from it. So what I wanted to talk about was, like, and I think this is part of the hobby that is sort of like the most wildly impractical part of it, gaming spaces. Like, do you have one? How is it set up? You know, so like at the moment, because I was saving up for a house, I'm living with mum and dad. So if I want to have a game in my own house, I have to wheel out these two giant foldable tables, you know, get the battle mat down, get the terrain from my room down, unpack it all. And obviously with the potential of a new space that's all mine, I'm very tempted to just sort of have a room where all that stuff can live all the time. And that's obviously, I'm very lucky that that's even an option for me. Because I think a lot of people, even if they wanted to do that, probably couldn't. I know me and you have played at your house before, Rich, but that was also a similar case of like, let's make a temporary space for this, which will then be removed, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it was those self-same foldable tables that you mentioned. Yes. I had to get you to bring the playing surface to which was very amusing, carting about 5 loads of stuff back and forth from your car. But
Whilst wearing a mask.
Yeah, absolutely. And distancing and all that. This is, we should say, for the sake of social distancing, this was like last July, something like that.
Yeah,
was it?
June, July. It was in between lockdowns.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that was my last in-person game of Hams.
Yeah.
So it's a fond memory. But yeah, I think like there's something about the size of table that Games Workshop has picked for these games, which is utterly unlike any table that is sold by any other human entity in the world. Like, nobody sells a 6x4 dinner table, as far as I can tell.
Mm.
And it's just this bizarre thing where, you know, some people like to put boards over a table they already have. Sometimes it's collapsible tables or like custom built tables. I don't know if any of you guys have ever looked at those things. They are not cheap.
No, I mean, you're just making the ultimate hobby purchase now.
a big warehouse to keep it in, aka a home.
Yeah, I mean, it makes those tables seem cheap in comparison, maybe, but they are still several armies worth of money, aren't they?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you have to say, compared to a literal house, this is cheap, it's going to be an expensive item.
It's not the ultimate justification, maybe.
Uh-huh.
They are at least changing the standard size of the table now.
40k,
like
yes.
For 40k, and for their various, a fair few of their specialist games now play on smaller tables, so you can use their...
Yeah, the skirmish games.
You can use their cardboard things, and it'll fit on... it'll fit on a large coffee table if you're lucky, that kind of thing.
Like Kill Team and Warcry will do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So what are they? Is it 44 by 60, the official 40?
Yeah, it's something ridiculously specific.
It's something equally weird to that.
The Games Workshop proprietary cardstock board size... Yeah. Brackets,
yeah.
TM.
Yeah, I think it's just 4 of those in a rectangle, isn't it? So, cool. Yeah, well, so if you got what was a gaming space part of your planning while you were looking at houses?
It's a bit awkward to say to an estate agent, you know, this is not going to be a bedroom. This is going to be a place where I enact tiny warfare with my internet friends when they come round.
I appreciate that you're planning on putting a child in here, but we actually have different ideas.
I have a lot of children, but they're all inanimate plastic war dolls.
What are you going to call him? Horace?
Have you met my son, Horace? No. But yeah, genuinely part of the house hunting process for me, and I'm aware this makes me an incredibly tragic man, but I'm okay with it, is can I fit a 6x4 table in here and also walk around it. And I mean, some of the bedrooms you get in houses these days, the answer is no, and that's horrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think luckily for myself, I managed to get a 3-bedroom house. And I think the front larger bedroom is probably going to become a gaming room, possibly / office. So I can do painting as well as gaming in there.
That's pretty good. If you can work one room that is your hobby room, and there's a room in there to have a game as well, that's a pretty big win.
I think so. Yeah. And it avoids the need to sort of, you know, colonize a lounge or a kitchen or something with a gaming table if you're doing it that way.
Yeah, I do think it's gonna require some discipline. And this isn't a commentary on you in particular, but you see all the time photos from people on Twitter, on Facebook groups of their like hobby room, and it's a gaming board and a painting desk and a set of shelves, and every single flat surface is just covered in boxes or unpainted models or, you know, like... To clear a table to do some painting or have a game would be a gargantuan task.
Yeah, a task in and of itself. Yeah.
So, Yeah, I do worry a little bit. I mean, my life feels like that in my one small room. But
there's a hoarding instinct at the heart of the hobby that you have to fight against as best you can.
Yeah, for definitely. Sure. I suppose this sort of difficulty is really the reason we have, you know, gaming spaces that aren't your own house or your own flat or what have you.
Yeah.
I mean, there are places local to us that we could go. And I don't know, there's something nice about having a game in your own house. That's what I've found.
Yeah, it goes both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice to have a game in your house. Very good to be able to...
Also wildly impractical.
Yeah, it can be wildly impractical. It's nice to, you know, be able to just sit on the sofa after you've played the game or have a break midway. But equally, Pete, if I come for a game...
Watch a TV preview.
If I come for a game at your house, I can't impulsively buy a tank. So...
Yeah. You'd have to do that very purposefully.
Yeah, it's...
Say, look, Pete, look at my phone. I'm ordering a tank now.
You did this to me. Yeah, so it is nice to go and patronise gaming stores and, you know, purchase something from them and justify it to yourself as helping the store that has helped you by providing gaming space. Cool. Anything else that you'd like to say about gaming spaces? Or Tom, anything else that you'd like to contribute?
I don't have anything much to add to this. I've never lived in a place where I could have had a elaborate gaming space. The best that I've got is that I bought the Shattered Dominion? I can't see it from here. The AOS board that they did a while back that was the cardboard boards and some plastic little ruins.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I've got one of those, and that... that packs up into a small enough box. I can, if I want to, I can clear off my work desk and it fits on there and have a game of Warcry on that if I wanted to. And that's, you know, it'll get you by. It'll get you by for a game of Warcry or a game of Kill Team or something.
It's nice to have options that...
Yeah, and I mean, that is the beauty of those smaller games, is that it doesn't require a table with a massive, ludicrous footprint.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got a 4x4 folding table tabletop that fits on a dining table that a very talented friend of mine made and donated to me when he moved house, which is great, and it does extend the dining table into something usable, but it also lives under the sofa, and I'm conscious that if we had a different sofa, it wouldn't fit anywhere still, so... Yeah,
never replace that sofa.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious solution, isn't it?
That's the only solution.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Tom, what was it that you wanted to tell us about this week?
So I have a specific mechanical thing that I want to infuse about and discuss its broader things, because I have been recently looking at the Lord of the Rings game.
Ooh.
So this is the game that got me into Warhammer way back when.
Very same for me.
Yeah, and the same for me, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my dad got me the starter box one Christmas, and...
regretted it ever since.
Yeah, he clearly... Do you think he knew where that one was going? And now I'm a podcaster.
The ultimate fate.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, and I love that. That was... I won't go too deep into the weeds on the rules of that, because there's one specific thing I want to dial in on, and that's the might, will, and fate abilities. So each hero in the Lord of the Rings game, every model is either a hero or a warrior, like... Mm-hmm. And each hero has three stores of points... called Might, Will, and Fate. Fate is the ability to shrug off wounds. It's effectively giving yourself a 4+ save against any damage you take, which is especially good in a game where heroes only have 2 or 3 wounds. Yeah. Some of them will have 1 wound. Will allows you to cast spells and adjust your courage tests, make you more likely to succeed on courage rolls. But might is, I think, the most interesting one to talk about, because it is very similar to how Age of Sigmar and 40K use command points, but it's on a per hero basis.
That's interesting.
So in Age of Sigmar, you have a certain number of command points that you get over the course of the game, and you can spend those. Any hero in your army will have an ability that they can give to a nearby unit, and there's some generic abilities that any hero can give. And in 40K, you have a much larger stock at the start of the game, and you have more specific things that aren't tied to heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, you get a lot of it. Each hero will have usually 2 or 3 points. And in a larger game, you might have 3 or 4 heroes. Mm-hmm. And then it's tied to that specific hero. So you can use it for abilities that break the flow of the game, like you can move, and in Lord of the Rings that also means you charge.
Right.
You can move before the other team does, before you can move outside of the turn order. You can fight at the start of the fight phase, which then allows you, if you win and if you kill your enemy, you can then move on to another fight and fight again. So those are very powerful abilities because they extend to the allies near that hero.
Right.
Hmm.
And one thing I particularly think is that if you tie, because this is a per hero stock of points, it becomes much more relevant that this is that hero who's doing it, right? Lord of the Rings is a very narrative game, and it's based on a story about a group of heroes,
right,
that save the world.
Sure.
And so I think it ties the strategic actions you're taking to the hero much more closely and interestingly than some of the Age of Sigmar stuff does.
Definitely seems more like thematically resonant, like given that Lord of the Rings is this sort of old school, you know, about heroes doing heroic things. The ability for your characters to actually almost act as these sort of inspirational locuses, that does seem really on point and well observed as a bit of like thematic rules writing.
Yeah, that seems really good. Lord of the Rings is the game that got me into the hobby back when I was a teenager. That was very much owning small plastic goblins and, you know, shaking around in a tin. I had no idea about this system within the game. It sounds really, really well thought out.
Yeah, I must admit, I haven't played the game for longer than I care to remember. Certainly more than 10 years. That's a lot more than 10 years.
Yeah, me neither.
But When you explained it, it definitely rang some bells, because I'm pretty sure this was in since the beginning or some variation of this system.
Yeah. So the other thing you can spend might on is to affect individual roles made by that hero.
Mm.
So you can spend it to increase or decrease a role by a single point. So it's great for heroic moments as individual actions. So Aragorn rolls a 3 and needs a 4 to kill the troll. You spend a point of might and you've done it. This will sound a little bit weedy in like for people who are familiar only with Age of Sigmar or New 40K, where things will have quite high numbers of wounds. But in Lord of the Rings, if you've got 3 wounds, you're pretty beefy.
Yeah.
Aragorn
has 3, right, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's kind of the level we're talking about. And there isn't armor saves or anything. So if you hit and then wound, that is most things in the game dead in that one sequence of rolls. So the ability to nudge one of those dice is very significant. Yeah, because in Age of Sigmar, some of the command abilities you use, particularly the generic ones, any hero can use them, and you need to be near a hero to use it. So it can feel a bit abstract, like I would like my blood warriors to run 6 inches this turn. Who is near enough to them to assign to that job? It's like giving somebody a task on tracking software, right? Who is close enough to this unit to be the one giving them this special rule? And so it doesn't matter. It doesn't say anything about the hero at all, other than that they are in the area at the time.
In the area who's available.
Yeah.
It does. Who can attend this meeting, please?
It is thematically strange, isn't it, to think if I'm a blood warrior and I can see the slaughter priest that I've been following devotedly 5.5 inches up the table from me, then I'm going to be inspired to try extra hard to charge in and join him. Maybe 7 inches up the table from me. Unless he's the one that's completely in charge, I don't care.
And equally, if his mate over there is just as inspiring, and so it doesn't imply anything about the heroes themselves. Yeah. Whereas when you tie it to a specific hero spending their resource, I think that becomes more narratively resonant. I think it is, here is the cool thing that Aragorn is doing. Here is the cool thing that Saruman is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't played the new version of the game. I'm hoping to at some point, because I collected a bunch of my old Lord of the Rings models over Christmas, and so we'll be painting those in the coming months. Repainting. I'm not brave enough to put my 13-year-old painting jobs on the table.
You should keep one. You should keep one as a comparison.
Definitely
for
keep
any
one.
That you repaint.
Know your history.
Yeah. They're super characterful minis, so I'm looking forward to seeing what you do.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. And there's new command heroic actions, that's it. There's new ones, so as well as the generic ones that just let you fudge with the turn order a bit, there's new ones that let you do more specific things, like move much faster without charging, and only certain heroes have those. Mm-hmm. So again, it's the same kind of what can this specific person, who might be a named character, what can they do for you, as opposed to what is the suite of jobs that needs doing? Who is close enough to do it?
Yeah. The other thing it reminds me a little bit of, which some of us in Role Models are familiar with recently, is the Age of Sigmar Soulbound RPG system. Some of us have been playing recently. So within that, you have a few different ways where you can use focus in a skill if you're trained in a skill to bump dice up or down, and also the party has a shared resource called Soulfire, which you can use individually to kind of guarantee a success on a roll, but you have a very limited stock of that and it's quite hard to get back. And it does exactly the same, albeit in an RPG setting rather than a war game setting, of creating narrative heroic moments. So yeah, I didn't realize there was anything with that in a kind of tabletop gaming sense, so that sounds really good.
Because there is, of course, also the fortune and fate system from the Dark Heresy line and the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing games, those older ones. So in that case, a fate point, so you have a stock of fortune points and a stock of fate points. Fortune points you can spend once a day to re-roll a roll. Or there's a couple of other abilities. Reroll a roll is the most common, most useful one, I think. So you'll have two or three of those. But that is tied to your stock of fate points. You permanently burn fate points to survive a deadly injury in that game. Like, it's just a narrative fiat. I know you've been thrown out of a spaceship, you spend the fate point, you come back, you are still alive. But because your stock of fortune points is at its maximum, your stock of fate points, your ability to manipulate your luck and to do these extraordinary things goes down as you die.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a sort of your luck is starting to run out kind of mechanic.
Yes. Yeah, you are feeling doomed. I've been in a play by post, as in like forum post, game of Warhammer Fantasy for coming up on 10 years now.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we've got one character who recently died after spending a long time at zero fate points. It really does feel like you are doomed in a way that I have never got from Dungeons and Dragons or a game like that, where you roll the dice for damage and either it kills you or it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? You are effectively fine until you die, yeah, from a narrative perspective. Yeah. There's that. So, yeah, the old 40K games are like notoriously punishing. Mm-hmm. You can take a lot of damage very quickly. You will need those fate points. So it does mitigate that, but I also think it is really good for... You can feel it hanging over your head. You are fine at the moment, but if you go down this time, you're not getting back up ever again, and you are not going to be able to mitigate the damage. Like one of the other people in that game uses their last fortune point every time to re-roll critical hit results that might cause the loss of a limb. So you no longer have any fortune points anymore. So now not only are you maybe going to die and stay down, but
if you don't.
if you lose a limb, that's it. You don't get to re-roll that roll. It's gone. Yeah, yeah, that's all an interesting combination of rules and an interesting tale of things. I would definitely... There's a part of me that would like to see something like the Might Points in Age of Sigmar or some kind of resource system divided up between the heroes. I'm sure somebody's going to tell me that the Bone Reapers or something like that has got this.
The Bone Reapers, I guess, are the closest in Age of Sigmar currently with their relentless discipline. But even then, I think that is the characters you have dictate how much you generate, and then you can apply it army-wide, and it's not dependent on range.
I think it almost makes quite a lot of thematic sense with the Bone Reapers specifically. I have a Bone Reapers army, so I've encountered this a few times, because they're supposed to be this sort of, we are the tax man, we would like your bones instead of money, please. And there's quite a sort of defined command structure in their lore and stuff, so I think it kind of makes sense for them.
Because in that case it represents discipline rather than hierarchy and discipline and organization rather than individual acts of heroism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
And one other note I want to throw in, because I've always loved this as a mechanic. If the character dies in the narrative of Lord of the Rings, and apologies if I'm going to spoil this for anybody, they have zero fate points in the game. So Theoden and I think the version of Boromir that's in the Fellowship and Gandalf, all of them have Gandalf the Great. All of them have zero fate points.
They cannot because
their fate is literally to die. They cannot mitigate these injuries as they come in.
So does that mean that everyone's favourite orc from the third film, Gothmog, has zero fate because his destiny is to get squashed by a trebuchet or something?
I can't remember. I can't remember, but I would think so. Yeah, something like that.
Everyone's favourite Lord of the Rings character.
He's certainly mine.
The Forge World has been doing their own line of Lord of the Rings characters that are scraping increasingly deep into the bottom of the barrel. Like, there's Gothmog's lieutenant who had a skull on his head.
Ooh.
There's Anborn and Mablung, two of Faramir's rangers, one of whom is good at making bird calls.
Wow. Please tell me there's a rule that represents that somehow.
There is.
Good.
I haven't read that
Tolkien
book, but
would
I saw
be proud.
In the FAQ that they've FAQ'd his ability to make bird calls.
Too OP.
Keeps attracting owls to the table. That's the problem.
I'm looking very much forward to trying that game again, to painting those models. Maybe that's what I'll be able to talk about next time if I'm on the podcast again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I always feel like Lord of the Rings is a pit that I am dangling perilously over, despite having sort of had various kits at various points. So the possibility of actually getting a game with someone I know is, a dangerous prospect.
And what about yourself, Rich? What have you brought to the table for us this month?
Well, I want to talk about something that's very close to my heart, being primarily a painter more than a gamer, and that is the army painting as a discipline, sort of comparing and contrasting that to painting for display or for competition. This is all quite personal, and it might get a bit wanky, and I don't mean to tell anyone paint their models or how they should enjoy painting their models, so just bear in mind, it's my opinions, my experiences. If you want to ignore everything I say, that is fine. I wouldn't judge you for it. It's probably good life guideline. So, I mean, we mentioned earlier, last year in particular, I painted a lot of stuff. I tend to paint quite fast when I've got a project in mind. And I think getting an army laid out on the table is always my goal, and I think, you know, I could almost go to a game that I've organised, set my army up on the table, and my opponent set up their lovely army on the table, and just kind of stand back and look at it, have a beer or a gigantic pint of Diet Coke, as seems to be the gaming event staple, and then just pack it all away again, go home. That's kind of...
I mean, you wouldn't even, like, trot around a little horsey and maybe make one it go or two. Nay.
As a yeah. treat. But yeah, so seeing it all set up on nice terrain is my raison d'etre, if you like, when it comes to army painting. So
yeah,
I guess I don't have like a top five list or anything. I guess I just wanted to cover some tips and tricks and areas to focus on.
Well, this will be definitely interesting to me because I'm very much in the same boat as you. Like, I'm not somebody, I've bought one model in my entire hobby journey that I've never intended to use on the tabletop, and I don't ever paint for display really. I'm definitely army painter and tend to go quick as a result of that as well.
I just think it's an interesting thing to consider, and now with YouTubes, Patreons, Instagram, even like your static social medias like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, people can put up little square photos that are a complete guide to how they did this section of blue or this bit of robe on an elf. There's so many resources out there that, combined with especially, I think, the kind of Citadel method stuff that Warhammer TV puts out and the Games Workshop put in their battle tones and...
Yeah, which is very much what I tend to follow as a sort of, you know, corporate shill. Yeah. I basically just do that.
Well, yeah, I'm the same, or have been until very recently as well. I tend to use primarily Citadel paints still because it's what I've got a rack full of sat in front of me. But it's important to note that kind of that Citadel method, when you take it to its extreme, is the heavy metal box art, effectively.
That's
and
true.
Those guys are incredibly talented.
Secret methods that they don't tell us about, notwithstanding.
Yeah. So you do see a lot of armies, and a lot of beautiful armies, where every single model has every little edge highlighted, and then another highlight on the corners, and another highlight beyond that sometimes, and think... again, it's not to pass judgment on how anyone else spends their time or enjoys their painting, but you think, like, probably could have had that on the table a lot quicker. And I found myself chastising myself over that before.
Fundamentally, I enjoy having a painted army more than I enjoy painting.
It's funny you say that, because I really enjoy painting. Also, I wouldn't do it if the game didn't exist. I'm fairly sure of that.
I would agree with that. I mean, I enjoy painting well enough. It's just I'm definitely doing it for the end goal of this stuff is painted now, rather than just as an individual enjoyable way to spend time. But there's lots of other benefits to it. Like it's nice to be doing something that isn't staring at a screen, that kind of thing. Yeah, but one of the things I enjoy about it is finding, I don't want to say easy or lazy, because that's like a judgment
efficient
on something that I do for fun. Yeah, let's go with that. I like finding that kind of efficient methods for getting effects that I kind of like. Like, I don't do a lot of things like mixing paint or that kind of thing. But I like the idea that there is, basically, there's a relatively simple recipe for whatever effect I want to get.
Right.
And I can get close enough, and I'm not spending loads of extra hours of my life mixing paints together to get precisely the right kind of red, when actually there's lots of reds and one of them will be all right.
Yeah.
So I think what I would say with this is, and again, I'm not somebody who's painted as much as Rich, but I painted 400 models last year. I'm doing all right.
Nothing by comparison.
Well, exactly. I'm a rank amateur compared to you, Rich. But, you know, sometimes people ask me, well, how do you do it so quickly? And I don't really have any particular method other than just... it's almost like the fuck it philosophy. Like, if you get something a little bit wrong, if you just, like, overspill the edge a little bit, if your base coating doesn't look perfect, just go to the next step. Just keep going. And you'll probably correct it as you do it. And if you don't, models are really small and probably no one will ever notice.
Yeah, the no one will ever notice test is a really good one. So occasionally just sort of sitting back and holding the model at arm's length and thinking, this is twice as close to me as it will ever be on the table and about three times closer than it will be to my opponent.
And it's gonna be surrounded by 40 others. Yeah,
exactly. Like, I can tell you guys a little secret, and don't tell anyone else on the planet about this. If you look at the my Bone Reaper army, and if you look at the Mortec Guard, you crack your eyes in between their shield and their body, you'll see that the only thing that I've done with them after having base coated them grey is just do a little dry brush in there. They're not painted like wood in the back of the shield like the text just says. Just dry brush it a bit with the same colour as the skeleton, and no one's ever going to see it, and it looks fine.
It's outrageous. I'm reporting you to the Warhammer police for that.
Well, I'm a criminal of conscience.
I think that is a really good tip, though. Just think about what people will see, what other techniques you're going to be using, and whether something actually matters or not. So, Pete, you mentioned messy base coating. I think probably about three models in my entire painting history have I base coated neatly.
Yes.
Very much.
It's when you're washing it.
Yeah, you're going to wash
gonna
it.
Get fixed.
It's
going to get fixed. When you're layering, when you're edging it.
Yeah.
It's going to get fixed.
Exactly. Beyond that, even, if it's on the underside of a model, if it's anything that's not upward facing.
Nobody's going
to
see it.
I'm not going to fix it, really, unless you can see it. It's very easy to take photos of your models and get a bit disconcerted with how they look. But again, yeah, that photo is twice as big as the model is going to be, even if you're holding it up to your face, probably. So,
and generally as well, much better lit.
Yes.
Like, if you go to a gaming hall or something, it's not going to be this sort of light box environment that most photography seems to get done in.
Yeah, gaming universally happens in venues that are sort of dank and grimy and underlit, or completely overly brightly top down.
What are you saying
lit?
About my theoretical gaming room in my house? Well, I can't believe you prejudged it.
This is one of the things that I wanted to react against with the hobby roundup posts that I've been doing for the site. Is it kind of to give a perhaps a more inviting experience from the hobby side, in that it's not all the super cool lightbox Instagram look. It's that, you know, sometimes we're all just doing this on the same desk we work at, that kind of thing. Some of us don't thin our paint and it turns out pretty fine. And that was kind of scotched by the fact that all of the stuff from this community that people submitted was really fucking good.
We all picked our best photos.
There's me. There's me using a white t-shirt as a backdrop for
my
God. Titans.
I didn't even tell that. That worked really well, considering.
I'm doing that kind of thing, and everybody
else
has got
right there.
These beautiful looks. as with everything else, social media has ruined it in that now it's a thing you can do for clout, and if you're lucky, for money, as opposed to just a thing you can do for the fun of it, for the pleasure of having done it.
Basically, now unrealistic Instagram body images apply to orcs as well.
Is that why they've started putting nipples on them?
Well, I'm also the petitions that I created, but let's move on from that.
Yeah, so I mean, I could waffle about army painting for forever, pretty much. I maybe came into this thinking like, oh, I'll give my top five tips, but I don't know what I would pick, because every army is different. Like my Necron army, a lot of that effort is saved by them being predominantly GW Leadbelcher colour, which I just spray out of a can. I get a Noln Oil gloss wash, and those bits are done. And then I change the colour of some of them with a little contrast. Glaze is a generous word. It's not that careful. On the joints and stuff, I think I use Skeleton Horde. Drop of contrast in all the joints, so they look a little bit more mechanical. And that means I can focus on things like the gold bits and the blue bits. But really, like the concession to detail there even is the top edges of blue shoulder pads are highlighted, so that if you look down on them, there's a bit of visual interest. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you watch some army painting tutorials from kind of more established painters online, a lot of them will be saying, like, don't even bother with that. Like, a lot of people will advocate doing some like general lighting simulation with an airbrush and then never edge highlighting anything. And actually, as long as the lighting on each model is done pretty well, you look back, you put them on the table, sit back and look at them from a distance, and they look incredible. Yeah, if there's one wrap-up message from this, it's don't judge your army either by the coolest model you've seen on Instagram or the best model you've ever painted. Because I have painted...
Only one model can be the best model you've ever painted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like, I have painted for competitions before. I've never been fortunate enough or skilled enough to like win a Golden Demon or a finalist pin or anything. But it's a different skill set, and I'm really, really happy with the things I've created. But try not to then sit that model next to the 100 model army you painted in the same amount of time.
Jillian the Imperial Guard's grunt isn't going to look the same as your Golden Demon entry.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess that's hopefully a positive message from the podcast. Paint an army, put it on the table. Be happy with it. Be happy with how it looks. We've talked in our Discord server a lot recently about that old school Stillmania image that pops up every now and then from, is it Nigel Stillman, I think his name is?
That sounds right.
Build.
He seems like a Nigel.
Yeah. Build.
Respect to the Nigels of the world.
Build one army that's the right amount of points, varnish it, never change anything about it, and play with it until the end of time. And don't ever revisit it once it's painted. Obviously that's taken to an extreme and is from the pages of a white dwarf that's probably almost as old as me.
Yeah.
But I think there is a valuable message there, which is just acknowledge what you're painting for gaming and what kind of level you want to pitch that at, and then what you're painting for display or for just a challenge to yourself, and acknowledging the differences.
And I mean, ultimately, this is a hobby, not a job, so you should just be doing whatever you find enjoyable, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do it badly if you want.
Yeah, sometimes it's fun to do stuff badly.
Just do it badly and don't put that much effort into it, and it's okay.
Yeah. Painted armies look better than unpainted armies, even if they're done really sloppily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess even if you want to cast judgment on your own armies, just don't do it to someone else.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, in that case then, we'll wrap up for this episode of Tiny Plastic People Podcast. So, where can you find us? The best place to find us is at tinyplasticpeople.com, as we mentioned at the start of the episode. That's our kind of collaborative blog project, so you'll see hobby roundups from our contributors, news articles, if and when there is news to be shared that you want to hear our thoughts on. There's also some build logs on there, some painting logs, and some, let's call them opinion pieces, just about what people love about the hobby. So check it out, give it a read, send us any feedback that you'd like to, either via comments on our social media posts or email to thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter, and on @tinyplasticpals. So you'll see links to our articles and pictures of some of our models there as well. In terms of individually, Pete, where can we find you?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter @Fienya, FIYENYAA.
Cool. How about you, Tom? Where can we find you?
People can find me on Twitter @LeSwordfish. That's L-E Swordfish, all one word. Or on Instagram @also LeSwordfish, but there's an underscore in it, L-E _ Swordfish.
Cool. And the best place to find me is on Twitter @RichNutter. And you'll find me sharing a lot of the TPP posts as well.
Just sharing.
Oversharing. Sometimes.
Depends on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we'll wrap it up there until next time. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, we hope you keep enjoying the hobby as much as we do. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
This just says end !! But I'll
we all shout that together. End.
We can chop that bit out. In that case,
chop chop.